Now, we're looking to the stars next because I'm delighted to be joined by David Moore, the editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, to talk about what's happening in our skies over the coming days, from a disappearing comet to a blazing space station and a meteor shower. There's plenty to see. David, thanks for joining me, and glad to be back talking to you on the programme.
Welcome back.
Thank you indeed. This is my first outing since I came back off holidays, and glad to be back in the chair. David, let's start with the comet Lemon, which has been a feature in our skies. For anyone who hasn't seen it yet, what have they been missing, and is there still a last chance or opportunity to spot it?
There is, yes. The comet only passed closest to the sun on November 8th, a couple of days ago. So it's now being heated at its most strongly. And if there's going to be any kind of an outburst, now is the time to see it. And as it was zooming in towards the sun, it actually passed closest towards, I think it was October 21st. So it's been getting a bit further away from us, but closer to the sun, which is more important. So it's been maintaining the brightness. And back around the moon wasn't out last week. Well, I was able to see the comet faintly with the naked eye. There's a star chart in Astronomy Ireland magazine showing you where to find it over in the west every evening.
Okay.
And I could just faintly see it. Now, to be honest, if you didn't know it was there, you probably wouldn't notice it from a star that looked a little bit hazy in binoculars, though it was transformed into a proper comet with a decent stubby tail. And one night, with the naked eye, I could see the tail as well. So that's unusual for comets to be that bright.
And what time are we talking about people should maybe get to see this?
Yeah, well, it's now diving south, so it's sort of going under the Earth, as it were, after it's passed the sun. So people in the southern hemisphere, you should have stayed in Australia for a while, will get to see it better than we will. But from here, it's low on the western horizon and getting lower each evening. So I think by the time we're talking next week, no one's going to see it. So hopefully you'll get a few clear evenings. And you want to be watching as soon as the twilight is dying away, which is about now, as soon as the show's over. Rush out and have a look over in the west if you've got a clear sky. And if you've got camera gear, great, send us in a picture. We've had loads of great Irish pictures. And the internet has been ablaze with international experts sending in their pictures.
And to whet people's appetite, am I right in saying that those who don't see this now will not see it? It won't be back for 1,000 years.
Yeah, there's comets like Halley's Comet, which was last around near the sun in 1986, won't be back till 2061. They come back, you know, in a lifetime. Some come back even more often, but this one is over 1,000 years. So if you didn't see it this time, you'll have to wait for the next bright comet. So don't worry, there will be other bright comets coming along. This one was only discovered earlier this year.
But
the one we already know should hit naked eye visibility in January.
And David, what does that timescale tell us about the journey that this comet is on, that timescale of 1,000 years? What does that tell us about that journey?
Well, we now know that out beyond the outermost planets, there's a huge swarm of comets. And we should think, now we're pretty sure, all that happened was the sun, the earth, the planets, they all form from a huge swirling cloud of gas and dust. And once the sun lit up, its radiation blew the gas and dust away, and the dusty bits coalesced into all the planets. And here we are with the solar system. But it's very cold out in the depths of space beyond the planets. And so the icy bits are still out there. And they clump together and made these comets, probably billions of them. And occasionally a passing star, maybe only once every few million years, passes by this cloud we call the Oort cloud, after the astronomer who theorized it, and some of them will fall in toward the sun. They may not come back for millions of years. They may go near Jupiter and get flung out of the solar system altogether. There's an interstellar comet from another star that's doing that at the moment with our sun. But some of them will get trapped in inner orbits. This one's obviously been trapped 1,000 years long. Isn't a particularly fast orbit. Halley's Comet is 76 years. I think the fastest comet is 3 and a bit years, Encke's comet. So there's all kinds of comets from 3 up to hundreds of years, more than human lifetimes, going around the sun. They only go around a few thousand times, and eventually the sun vaporizes all the frozen gases and water ice that they've got, and they end up as a rubble pile or maybe disintegrate completely.
Okay.
That's the story of comets.
Now, moving from natural objects to a human-made one, you've noted that the International Space Station will be visible in our evening skies starting on Friday. For someone who's never looked at it, what should they expect to see, and what's the best way to know exactly when to look up?
Yeah, this is great fun. I mean, you're going to have difficulty seeing the comet with the naked eye. cesium binoculars, as I said, but you don't need anything to see the International Space Station. It is 100 times brighter than the brightest star in the sky when it flies over. So from Friday for about 2 weeks, we get these two-week windows to see it every night, every 2 months in the evening sky. And we'll be issuing the prediction when to see it on our social media. Mm-hmm. And what you see is a very bright star-like object drifting across the sky, roughly at the speed that high-flying jet aircraft cross it. You see something whiz across the sky in a second or less. That's a shooting star meteor.
Yeah.
So ISS will be obvious for several minutes. But okay, you need to go out at exactly the right time, and that's what will be on the social media.
Social media. Now, and of course, David, when we see that speeding across the sky at the speed of a jet, it's easy to forget that there are actually people living up there. Can you tell us a bit about the crew aboard the ISS right now and what they're doing, or can you give us some information on that?
Yeah, I mean, they change the crews roughly every 6 months, and they have occasional tourist visitors as well. And in this particular case, there are 7 astronauts currently on board the space station. And when they bring those down, we'll see their spacecraft chasing the ISS across the sky. And sometimes they send up cargo craft. One went up last week. And we can see those chasing it if it happens when it's flying over our evening skies. So there's all kinds of shenanigans going on with the astronauts who are up there. And basically what they're doing is they're sort of lab technicians and guinea pigs. It's still relatively early in the space program, so we're still watching the effects that long-term weightlessness has on the human body. And ISS is a huge laboratory in space, so scientists on the ground can do things in weightlessness that they can't easily do on the ground. So it's a brilliant laboratory, unique laboratory to do this. And Irish experimenters have done this. We've done things as crazy as cement upwards. And so they're studying how we're going to live in space in the future, but also doing things like you can make drugs, at least test samples of them, that you can then see is it worth building a multi-billion dollar factory to mass produce for the human race, or high-speed computer chips have been developed in space. So anyone who's got a plan, it'll cost you money to fly it on the International Space Station, but if billions or health of millions is at stake, that's what the ISS is for. So when they're up there, they're doing experiments on themselves and on the experiments that have been sent up by scientists.
Okay. Now, Monday night brings the peak of the Leonid meteor shower. What's the story behind this shower, and what are the ideal conditions for trying to see those 15 or so meteors per hour?
Yeah, meteor showers are named after the constellations they appear to stream out from. So if you could plot all the meteors over the course of a night, in this case, they'd all point back to the constellation of Leo. And Leonid is Latin for from Leo. That's all that means. So Leonid meteor shower. And the meteors themselves look like any normal meteor, but they will point back to that particular constellation, which is rising over in the east. And 15 an hour isn't great. There's going to be a much better one next month, perhaps 10 times stronger. That's the Geminids, more of that, around the 12th, 13th of December. But this one storms every 33 years because the comet left all this dust behind in its orbit, and that's what we're streaking through on the Monday night. That is fairly close to the Earth, and the dense patches of stuff it's recently released are still go relatively close to the Earth. It goes around the sun every 33 years. That's why there's enhanced activity. So it's an unusual meteor shower in that regard. We don't think there's going to be a storm this year. And by the way, a meteor storm is considered to be 1,000 meteors per hour or more. So they really do rain down like raindrops at the occasions like that. Very, very rare to see it. But, you know, the last time was 1999, so we're not expecting one this year. But we'll keep you posted and just keep your eye out. And if you're out at the weekend, maybe looking for the comet or the space station, you might see a shooting star fly over. If you know the constellations and it points back to Leo, that was a Leonid.
Now, David, easy to see events. For our early risers or anyone with a simple pair of binoculars, you've highlighted a few pairings in the dawn sky this week. Could you give us a quick guide to the best don't miss moments, if you like?
Yeah, these are all in Astronomy Island magazine every month. And you know, a lot of people don't like getting up very early, but some people get up early anyway. And the first thing they don't do is look out at the sky. So those people should look out at the sky on Tuesday and Thursday and Monday coming. And there's details and diagrams in the magazine to give you more on this if you forget. But tonight, for instance, if you're using your binoculars and you watch the moon, you'll see the Beehive star cluster, which you can normally faintly see with the naked eye, but with the moon nearby, you're going to need your binoculars or a small telescope. And I've seen it in both, and it is a lovely sight that you wouldn't realize was going on without us telling you. So enjoy that tonight until dawn. The moon's not going to rise, I think, till after 8, 9 o'clock. So it's really a late night event, and it'll be closest at dawn anyway. Thursday morning, if you like getting up early on Thursday morning, a couple of nights time, then the bright star Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, linking back to the Leonids, but nothing to do with the meteors. It just happens to be very close to the moon. There'll only be two moon widths separating the star and the moon. So you'll see that plainly with the naked eye. You don't need binoculars for that one. In fact, you hold your finger out at arm's length, you'll be able to cover the moon and the Regulus at the same time. That's how close they get. That's quite rare.
Wow.
And then going to Monday morning, 7 a.m., just before it gets bright, we have Spica, the brightest star in Virgo. And it's just three moon widths to the left of a very thin crescent moon, which won't be as bright and should be more awe-inspiring. So I definitely would get up early for that one. And that's so close, you could cover Spica and all of the moon with your thumb held at arm's length. So another rare sight for early risers.
Now, David, shifting focus from observing to research, Astronomy Ireland has a public lecture tonight about searching for atmospheres on exoplanets. And you describe this lecture is a doozy. Why is the study of exoplanet atmospheres such a game changer in the search for life beyond Earth?
Well, if we find a planet that has an atmosphere that contains oxygen or other trace compounds that nature wouldn't naturally produce from volcanoes and other simple effects on planets, we will know it almost certainly came from life. So, for instance, if people were looking back at the Earth, they'd see there's oxygen in our atmosphere, and that would be a dead giveaway because oxygen reacts with everything. If 20% of the atmosphere is oxygen, what's making it? Volcanoes couldn't be doing that or other geological forces. It would have to be at least plant life. So by studying the atmospheres of these planets, we learn more about all the atmospheres. But if we find one the size of the Earth, around about that size, and that's got an oxygen or other types of materials like that in its atmosphere, we'll be almost certain we found another place with life. And that would be a real game changer. And it's an Irishman that's one of the leading experts in the world who's studying this. And he graduated from Trinity College. He's going to give our talk tonight online by Zoom. His name is Dr. Cal Maguire. He's now a lecture researcher over in the University of Bristol. And he needs to use things like the James Webb Space Telescope, the 10 billion euro most expensive telescope ever used. Because this finding atmospheres on planets around other stars is the cutting edge of astronomy. There isn't anything really much more difficult than that. It's hard enough finding the planets, let alone finding out what their atmospheres is made of. There's various tricks. If you love detective stories, you'll love his talk this evening.
Now, I'm looking at the clock here, and that that lecture is on in about 62 minutes at 7 o'clock. People can still get tickets for that if they want now, can they?
They can indeed, because it's an automatic system. The moment you sign up for a ticket, the link will be instantly given to you and emailed to you. So just be careful when you're online that you copy and paste the link, put it into your laptop, your smartphone, whatever you use. You can project it onto your TV screen for the whole family to watch. The talks are usually about 45 minutes long. I'll give a brief guide to what to see in the sky after the talk and a few notes at the beginning. The whole thing fits in an hour and a half, depending on how much detail the speaker wants to go into. And if for any reason you miss it, we record them. And you can get the recording the next day or any other day after that for a whole year. So it's great fun. We do it once a month. And it's been a real game changer for Astronomy Ireland, because most of our members do not live in Dublin. They all get the magazine. They get the weekly members email. And they can come to the monthly talks for half price. So just go along to astronomy.ie. Everything's explained there. There are even evening classes going on every Tuesday until the middle of December. You can sign up for those, repeat all the classes next year for free. There's just a huge amount going on in space, especially in Ireland. every week.
Well, David, a huge thank you to you. That's David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. And remember, you can find daily sighting times for the International Space Station and details on their public lecture on their website, astronomy.ie. And don't forget, if you want to get on, it's just over 60 minutes now for that lecture to begin. So get on there and get their tickets for that. And David, thank you as always for joining me on Kilkenny Today.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Now,